What's up, guys? Welcome to the Flawed Dad's Guide to Parenting, the podcast all about the average flawed dad learning to be a better parent. Today, we're talking to James Smith of The Social Dad, a dad blogger, podcaster, YouTuber, all-around dad influencer. We have a great conversation about a range of topics, including fate, nature versus nurture, playing LOL dolls and LOL Monopoly with your kids, and a whole bunch of other things. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation as we get into some really deep topics, but also laugh a lot along the way. Stick around and listen as a couple of flawed dads figure out how not to screw up our kids too bad.
Hi, James. How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Doing really well.
Thanks so much for coming on. Appreciate it.
Of course. Actually, I've been taking time. I'm really glad to do this because I've been winding myself up no end because I've been looking at the Dogecoin phenomenon. And I realized back in 2014, I bought about 8,000 of them and I can't for the life of me get into them.
Oh, no.
So happy that I can do something else for 5 minutes.
One of those that you've locked your wallet and...
Another friend has been talking about there are gamers back in the day that would participate in tournaments, right? Young kids, mm-hmm. etc. And the 10th place prize, 9th, 10th place prize type stuff was like earning one Bitcoin. And the top cash prize was like $500, mm-hmm. right? And so all these people, all these parents that have like, and kids that have totally forgotten about these Bitcoins and things that are sitting in this locker somewhere in the exact same scenario, like, oh God, what the hell is that password? I need to know this because do you understand what it is?
So that's about $3,500 of Dogecoin that you've got locked
in the US. Yeah, that it is. And it's like, it's really infuriating. And then just as a sort of, because that's not torture enough, I was like, I wonder if back in the day, I'd instead of buying 8,000 Dogecoin, I bought 8,000 Bitcoin. And I looked it up and it's $500 million. Like, why do you look these things up?
Yeah. If only.
I mean, exactly. Like the fifth richest person in Canada.
But without the password.
So
at the same time.
Yeah, without the password. Yeah. So I was like, just drive myself absolutely insane.
I'm in theory the fifth richest individual. I can't spend any of it and don't have access to it.
Yeah.
That would be suicidal almost. Imagine that. There's that CEO as well out there that died with
Quadriga.
That's
the name of the company was Quadriga.
Have you heard this where the CEO had the only second password to be able to unlock all of these things?
All the accounts.
Billions and billions of dollars, I'm pretty sure, mm-hmm. of Bitcoin or coins in general that these investors and things just have no way to get it to it. There's petitions to exhume the individual's body. I don't know exactly what they're thinking. It's just like, I'm just so pissed.
Oh, it's in his jacket pocket.
I want to dig up this asshole. Like,
just punch him around a bit.
Yeah. I think it's tattooed on his ass. Like
nothing.
They figure that they may get back like $2 million of the $1.6 billion or something that's locked up in the online wallet.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of accusations of fraud and that kind of stuff, too.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's kind of rife for it and a lot of dodgy dealings. I was watching an interview with Mila Kunis, mm-hmm. who is she married to Ashton Kutcher?
Yes.
So they were saying how he's like really smart and he invested really early on in Uber and Airbnb and Bitcoin. And so... like 8 years ago, they invested a ton of money in Bitcoin and they were like, oh, you know, did really well. I had to turn it off because it made me so sick. Like, even though you're a millionaire from TV shows and very clever investments, knowing that you did so well with some disposable cash 8 years ago with Bitcoin, I just couldn't take it.
Yeah.
And like gorgeous as well. I was like, well... give me a chance.
That's right. Exactly.
So nothing here. Yeah. I can't even get my Dogecoin. It's a joke money anyway.
I think I can understand why he's maybe not in movies anymore.
Do you find that those sorts of things, like missed opportunities, kind of hang on to you and you feel those really strongly?
I don't know. I do think about when I was going to buy Bitcoin. I mean, still hanging on this money thing. And I thought my wife would be upset if I spent $100 on buying 20 Bitcoin. And so I didn't.
Right.
And that, it annoys me because I told her about this and she goes, no, I wouldn't have minded at all. So
knowing the result
kind of thing. Yeah, knowing now, yeah, we would have been millionaires. We should have done it. Oh, but cool. Okay, thanks. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I was actually reading, and I saved it, and I'm trying to find it now, about how you should act as if everything that happens is for the good. So no matter what happens, everything is for the best. You should abandon the notion of defeat. And when something goes wrong or doesn't work, it doesn't mean you're failing. When an outcome is other than the one you hope for, it's a window of opportunity.
Right.
Okay. Which I really liked and I saved on my desktop. But
yeah, that brings
things a bit.
That's very similar to the first episode that we've recorded, is somewhat similar. The mindset overall, there's a book called The Danish Way of Parenting. And Danish individuals overall seem to be one of the happiest groups out there.
Yeah.
And one of it is just their mindset, which is somewhat similar to the same concept, is that they don't necessarily look at something as being disastrous. There's always some spin to it. Oh, it's raining outside. Well, at least I'm not on vacation. Or, a bunch of cake crumbs fell on the floor. Well, at least the whole cake didn't fall on the floor, or just always some reversal of change of looking at some positive outcome instead, which is really, it's quite interesting and inspirational.
So given the quote that you just read, you know, would you, it smacks of the idea of fate to me, that if everything is happening for a positive reason, then everything is happening with purpose, and that it's preordained. Would you be a subscriber to the idea of fate, and particularly, you know, given that this is a podcast about parenting, would you say that, you know, your children are then predestined to live a certain life no matter what you do?
No, I don't believe in fate and I'm not religious. From the sort of what I was just reading, which is again, sort of almost taken verbatim as quickly as I could type off of a TikTok that I found particularly inspiring amongst other people doing dances. But I like the general sort of message, like, oh, hey, that's good. I'll write that down. Sound clever.
Yeah.
I don't think that anything's preordained. I don't think if you don't believe in a creator or an ultimate plan, then I don't see how anything could be other than completely random.
Right.
In saying that, I think that if everything is completely random, then you kind of have to make the best of all the situations. So like nobody could have predicted that Dogecoin would have done well, or that it would rain today, or I would have dropped a cake or anything like that. And you just have to sort of make the most of it and try and sort of, to quote another genius, Monty Python, you've always got to look on the bright side of life.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Great movie.
Yeah, absolutely. So on that sort of vein, one thing that Warren and I have a constant debate over a little bit is nature versus nurture overall. And it sort of dovetails into that a little bit. I am sitting more on the nurture side of the fence in terms of sort of the predestined type stuff where your children are born, what forms them into the people who they are inevitably going to be. Is it the majority of the interactions that you as a parent and their experiences with peers, et cetera, is that the thing that forms their overall behaviors and traits, or is it more nurture where
nature?
Thank you. Yes, that one. You could tell where I sit when I keep saying nurture. is nature more responsible for how things are coming as well? Do you have any insight in terms of where you sit?
Good questions. I think nature provides us with the building blocks, mm-hmm. and then all the ingredients, and then nurture gives us the opportunity to sculpt and to build whatever we want out of those blocks. I think that the way you parent, thanks. off the top of my head, that's off another TikTok. No, who needs college when you got?
Funny you should ask that.
The TikTok philosopher. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I do a mean floss. but I think, it's kind of, we're as parents, we're given an incredible opportunity, which does have, of course, responsibility with it. That we live in fear of messing up, but I don't know. I think kids will sort of, they're there to be sculpted by what happens to them and how we react to those situations. And if they learn that, they should be afraid of different things, or if they should embrace other situations, or how to sort of love to learn or share kindness, because they're the people who are looking at us for example and how to live and how to behave. And so as parents, if we're doing what we think is the right thing to do, then I think that's what they're going to mirror eventually, like in their formative years when they're kids and when they're teenagers, they're mostly chemical run anyway. Mm-hmm. So they're completely irrational. whether it's like anything from depression to anxiety to feeling like they're on a sugar rush all day, most of that is some kind of chemical imbalance. And it, from what I understand, it can be treated. Sometimes it is just the way you're wired.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is another thing of nature. But I think, I don't know, it's so hard, and all kids are completely different and some are just wired different. But we can only do as parents what we can. And I think taking on the responsibility of learning how to be a parent, like we would learn how to walk or ride a bike or do algebra and stuff, learning how to parent isn't something that you can be really taught. You can be given lessons, mm-hmm. but unless you're doing it as a dad or as a parent, you're not going to be able to know what works in your family.
Yeah.
And with your kids until you've tried it. And it's a lot of trial and error.
Yeah.
I mean, my daughter's only 5 and I'm trying to figure things out every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time I completely fail, but as long as she's alive, then I'm doing all right.
That's
win.
Success.
I passed. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. Made it another day.
So continuing with that thought, as a dad of a 5-year-old daughter, are you starting to see the impact of nurture? Is she picking up some of those things that you're hoping to teach? And alternatively to that, is she picking up some of the things that you really wish she wasn't picking up? You know, like all the bad habits.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's sort of a few examples. So I think she's picking up anxiety that is from me and maybe some of the mum as well, but a lot from me. And it could be anything from like a tag on the inside of her clothes, which I always have, for as long as I can remember, I've cut off. As soon as I would buy a new shirt or someone's given to me, first thing I do is cut it, because it drives me, like I can't think of anything else. And I see her reacting the same way. Mm-hmm. And I never thought there was anything, like I never went beyond, this is a label, it's annoying, as a thought. And then I would get on with the rest of my day because I cut it out. But I see it in her. So I think maybe there's something there, whether it's just the way we're were built, or it is something that she's learned because it bothered me. There's always something where I see it, and it's something that I want to correct. And I think every kind of future generation, I would hope, tries to improve on the last. Mm-hmm. And so if they do see something that they, like a parent sees in their child, a failing of their own, or not a failing, but something that they wish they could correct, yeah, or something that they'd like to steer in a different direction, then it's up to us to try and sort of edge them away. You could call it a flop. I mean, like, to err is human. Like, people are messed up and broken in all sorts of different ways. Everyone, no one's perfect.
Yeah.
Like, I'm only human is a perfect phrase. Like, don't expect perfection, because you won't get it. So I think having things that you wish were better about yourself is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And you can't stop seeing the, I know everyone's like, oh, you got self-love and you got to think you're perfect in whatever way. I think as soon as you do that, you're kind of sitting on your own laurels.
Right.
Like you, in my opinion, which is a very like self-deprecating, I should be better way, but is that a bad thing?
But
is it bad to think that you should be improving?
Isn't self-deprecation and self-criticism like very much the
and British rightly
thing?
So. How dare we think of it?
that part is very much the nature. It's unavoidable.
Yes. Yeah.
So with that in mind, what type of, what area of parenting do you feel like you spend the most time trying to improve on yourself?
Oh, myself.
You could talk about your wife as well. You're welcome to do that if you want to bash.
Well, she might listen to it. So I better not. I know better than that.
Not walking into that.
No, you can't get me. Yeah. Like, oh, did you see her dress? I did not see anybody. what lady? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I'm looking firmly at the floor. What area of parenting? I don't know. That's a really good question. Like, I don't know. Can you give me an example of?
One thing that we talk about quite often is a sort of snap anger. Not that I don't think we're yelling, like bursting a whole bunch, but it's just there is just naturally a reaction where something instantaneous, a glass hits on the ground where it was avoidable, you know, especially when you've said, hey, maybe be mindful of that glass, and then it smashes on the floor, just that the quick boil up inside of you. And not to say, as I said, yelling per se, but it's just, I think everyone has those moments where you could look back and go, boy, I would rather have been maybe more calm or something like that. And so that's one thing that both Warren and I are constantly talking about and working on, is just trying to, what tricks or tools can we do to sort of woosaw our way out of that initial sort of moment to have maybe a more rational conversation.
Yeah. I think that's kind of, that is one for me where I have to be mindful of my tone, and it's something that my wife catches me on often, and now my daughter does as well, which is awesome.
I love being reminded how my tone, nurture thing again.
Right? yeah, and she's learned that that's something that mummy should hear about, is that my tone is not kind right now. You've just done something that I've told you, please don't do that. So it's the tone for me. And it's like, I need to make sure that I'm dealing with myself appropriately. I mean, at the end of the day, like, a bit of smoothie that's spilled on the carpet, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, if, you know, you look at the big picture where we're just on a big globe spinning around, like a bit of smoothie on a carpet, who cares? Like, you're not going to remember that on your deathbed. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I will.
Yeah, I probably will as well. Flipping Dogecoins, I could have been. Right. it is the tone for me, and it's making sure that I step away out of the situation and not reacting. I mean, I'm not like a physical person, but my tone gets a little more to the point.
Yeah, yeah.
I should remember that I'm not dealing with a peer. I'm dealing with a child who needs kindness and to know that she's in a safe situation all the time.
Yeah, yeah. I know one thing I've been working on, just relating to anger or just situational things, is more I'm trying to ask myself, do I have a time machine? The smoothie on the carpet, for example. Yeah, you can get angry about the situation, but at the end of the day, do I have a time machine? There's nothing I can do about it. All we could do is try and look at the situation and try and move on. So that's one thing I've been really trying to remind myself often when things happen. Like, okay, it's no time machine. Can't change the thing. To get frustrated about this is pretty meaningless.
It's spilt milk, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's done. Can't cry over it.
So given that you have a dad blog and are very active, you know, in the dad influencing community, would you say, in continuation of that thought about what you think, what you work on from a parent perspective, are there areas that you think come up a lot for other dads to be working on? Like, are there areas that you're noticing are kind of hot spots for dads?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a tricky, like, and that's one thing I suppose I should do more of, is ask challenges of other people, like how are they doing. I mean, I do ask like if they have any tips about like how to help my kid ride a bike and how do they do that, but I think especially as it is Mental Health Month, talking about mental health and checking in, which I think is something that the dad bloggers in groups, especially on the Facebook group, do, though I think we can always do more. And I think one thing about the dad blogger Facebook group, we just got, I mean, I belong to a few of them, the Canadian one's especially good, but not to knock on the US one, but we're really good at checking in and seeing what's going on. And there's a guy, Christian, who was in the hospital today, so I joined his live and, you know, just dropped a couple of messages, and just it's the kind of things that we do to support each other, because we know that being a dad is hard. And there aren't traditionally an awful lot of groups where, you know, there's like mum groups and mummy daughter swimming and whatever else, but the dads are kind of thought of as like the third party in the relationship. And I think, yeah, I mean, I think mental health check-ins is something that we should be doing much more often. I might do a post about that tomorrow. Actually, that's a good idea. I mean, I don't know. Like, what do you think? Like, how do you... Like, I know you guys talk about mental health a lot.
Yeah, it's been like, one that's had a big impact, particularly on my life with...
But do you think that's a... an opportunity for amongst the dads as well?
Yes. Yeah, a huge one, because it carries such a huge stigma still.
I think especially from a, I'm sorry, I'm interjecting, but from a guy's perspective as well, I think that it's hard for fathers or guys just in general to almost admit that they are something wrong that they're struggling with, right?
So, but it doesn't even have to be about them, but about their families.
It's just, you know, it's tough to, I think by and large, there are some people that are more sharers than others, but by and large, I think it's harder to say like, we're really struggling. Marriage maybe isn't so good right now, or kid, like it's tough. I think it takes a lot more confidence or just something that you're used to, or knowing that the stuff that you're putting out isn't going to be seen as weak or something out there, which is one thing that we're trying to change as well, is just open discussion as much as possible. And that's, to your point, bringing up and just talking about it more just gets things out in the open a whole lot more, and opens the discussion to potentially people that maybe not have shared before are able to open up and do it.
Mental health is definitely a big one. I would say another one that, you know, we're hearing a lot from other dads that we're interviewing is putting technology down and being present, like actually present. You know, that's one where in my house, my phone goes away at 6 o'clock, right? So that it can't distract me. It's family time between 6 and bedtime for the kids. Unless there's something very specific with work that has to be done. So, you know, that's a big one. I wanted to ask a little bit, continuing on the idea of the blog, that sort of thing. What was it that made you decide to step out and, you know, be a dad influencer and dad blogger, that sort of thing? You talked about mommy blogs. What brought you into this to put yourself in the spotlight and with that potentially be somebody who can be criticized for the way that you're being a dad?
Yeah. Well, there's a sort of a few parts of that. So I've always been very passionate about writing and producing, like taking photos and making videos and stuff through school and college. And my dad was always a big impact in that. Also Liz, he taught photography at a college level. So he was always helping me, you know, develop in the dark room and that kind of stuff. So I've always been fascinated with taking pictures and making stuff that I think people could enjoy. After college,
amazing,
I worked,
by the way, just like, as a side note on your Instagram, your pictures are fantastic.
Very kind. Thank you. So after college, I worked on cruise ships, where I was doing photography and video, and I started a travel blog. So I thought it'd be a good idea. So I don't have to keep sending postcards home and, you know, mm-hmm. I thought it'd be interesting, like tales from working at sea. And then when I came home after a few years, I wanted to keep up the blog, but I didn't really know what to write about. Like I could write about places I've been to previously, but you know, there's only so many memories you got. So then social media started to become a thing and I thought, well, perhaps should start talking about this and then I could be like the go-to person for it. Quickly become usurped by other people who are much cleverer than me. But so I did that for a while. And then I sort of kept it up and had some like predictions about how social media was going to go and the latest Twitter things. And but then when I started to become a parent and we were going through the IVF process, I thought, this, you know, maybe I should start writing things down. I kind of did, but then I was working at Nature's Path Foods as their social media person, and we'd just done some market research and we paid this PR company an awful lot of money, and they were doing some surveys and stuff, and they said your target audience for your ads should be women because they spend 60 minutes a week grocery shopping. And so the whole marketing department said, oh great, now we've got a person. And I said, how long does the father take? And they said, oh, we'll have to get back to you. And a couple of days later they got back and they went through their research and it was 54 minutes. So 6 minutes shy and we weren't the target audience anymore.
Right.
And I took that information as part of being a little hustler, and I went to a bunch of brands that I was already talking to, like Ethical Bean Coffee. And I said, you're all talking to the women because you've been told that, you know, they're the go-to person who buys the groceries, but actually dads spend almost as much time. And so you're missing out on about 47% of the potential audience. And I said, oh, that's interesting. And so I got to work with them. And then that was 5 years ago. And then it just kept going on and on and on. And then once you've sort of got a couple of brands under your belt, that sort of act as like your resume. And then you get to work with more and more. And it's just, I work with an agency called Shine in Toronto, and they're awesome, and they just bring stuff to me and I say, yes, I would love to do that. Mm-hmm. Or no thanks. That's
are you fun. Really selective as to the brands that you work with?
Yeah. I mean, luckily the agency do a lot of the legwork for me. Derek and Sophie, they're incredible, but there's some that just aren't a right fit for me. And either they'll say no as the front line or if people come to me directly and then I pass it on, I say, no, I'm not going to, I don't want to do that. It doesn't, like if it's like a pharmaceuticals company or supplements that haven't been really tested or gambling and that kind of stuff, it's like, I'm not doing that. I'm not a doctor. Or interesting scented oils that will do all sorts of things for you. So, I don't believe you. Yeah. So I'm just not going to, I'm not going to do it. And I don't feel confident. If I don't either use the product or believe in it, I can't honestly tell people to go and buy it. I think that's not right.
Yeah. That's very admirable of you. Not all the same within social media world. Now just,
I'm not going to do skinny tea and detox lollipops. Doesn't work.
Just before we get to ask the final question of you here, tell us a little bit about where we can find you and what you want to talk about.
Thanks. I'm on Instagram and Twitter, James RCS, and my blog is socialdad.ca, and on Social Dad Podcast, YouTube Social Dad. TikTok,
social. if anyone can find my floss, they're going nice.
Yeah, right. If anyone can find my Dogecoin wallet, I'll give you 2 Dogecoin. I'll be the one crying. I think that's all the things.
It's a lot. It's
it's too many things.
A lot of good stuff out there. The social dad, usually the website itself probably has a link to a whole lot of things on there. So.
Yeah, you just go on there. You find my stuff.
So the last question I'd like to ask is just sort of a lighthearted one, but things that you hate to do with your kids or kid but you do anyways.
Oh, so many. playing like the LOL dolls is... Or Play-Doh. Yeah, everyone's like, oh, yeah. Or Play-Doh, because I know it's going to go on the floor and I've got a race to put it away before it gets dry and ruined and another $10 wasted. Or she, for Christmas, she got LOL Monopoly.
Yeah, we've got that.
Like, it's fun when we do it as a family game night. Mm-hmm. And she really gets into it, but then she reaches a limit, and I think it's kind of the same limit I have, where you're just going around giving each other money, mm-hmm. scraping by and wondering how fast you can go bankrupt, and it's too close to life for me. Like, this isn't fun. Like, great, I'm poor in the game as well, this is really good. I want to watch Bluey again.
it's hitting a bit of a soft spot.
I don't think if I've ever finished a game of Monopoly either. Like,
ever finishes. You got to pay tax again. Oh, cool. fun. What a good way to spend an evening.
It usually ends in somebody flipping the board.
Right.
Like, just.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not doing this anymore.
Or someone goes, let's go all the way around and mess up all the money. Mm-hmm. Like, no, I'm the bank. You can't mess up the money. You ruined it. Forget it.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for coming on. Really do appreciate it. Your time and everything else. Everyone go ahead and, as I said, check out James on all the social media, etc. Of course, if you do like what you're listening to and hearing us banter back and forth, etc., please do subscribe to our podcast. It's always a big one so that you get notified when new ones come out. We try and do that at least every Tuesday and Thursday. We might be trying to push for some more down the line. We'll see how that goes, but that's the best way to get notified. And of course, if you want to contact us, email us at hello@flaweddad.com.
Or visit us on our website at flaweddad.com.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, everyone.
Amazing. Thank you.